Good afternoon. My name is David Goldberg, attorney registration number 13243. With me today is Talia Bollinger. And we represent Sonata. Now, in this case, Colorado courts, we recognize fundamentally that Colorado courts traditionally accord much deference to arbitration boards, and that the Court of Appeals reviews the trial court's findings on a motion to vacate an arbitration award for clear error, which we believe has occurred in this case. There are two fundamental rules when reviewing, when Judge Brinkley reviewed the arbitration award in this case under 1322-223C. The first is that it's universally recognized, as this court has determined in Colorado, that in the absence of an agreement or statute providing otherwise, parties to an arbitration have an absolute right to be heard and present evidence before the arbitrator to have a fair opportunity to rebut the evidence and arguments presented. Secondly, that the arbitration proceeding may not violate a party's fundamental right to due process. We believe both is have occurred here. First and foremost, ambiguity. Arbitrator Naves, in paragraph 14 of his arbitration award, determined and found, said specifically, quote, I find that this language is ambiguous on its face. As a result, extrinsic evidence in the form of parole testimony of the party's intentions, the time of contracting, along with emails leading up to the final draft language of the provision, coupled with the party's course of dealing, including communication between the parties over the course of nearly 2 years after execution of the agreement, are admissible to aid in the interpretation of that provision. Thereafter, he found that he was not convinced that my clients had entered into a pricing dispute, and he didn't believe that my client presented credible testimony relative to the prices and to the fact that a forward contract or something produced 10 or 22 months down the road could be priced. Contrary to those factual findings and conclusions, a witness, Kevin Swanson, the key witness, a party opponent who would have provided an admission against interest, would have refuted each and every one of those findings.
Sorry to interrupt. Yes. So let me just ask then, if Kevin Swanson was such a key witness, why was he not mentioned in the opening?
That's a great question, Your Honor. Thank you for asking me. Contrary to the appellee's brief, arbitrator Naves merely stated that he wanted a brief, quote, a brief opening statement was appreciated, not to inform you of the issues, but directed towards how you will proceed, such as the order in which evidence on particular issues will be presented, unquote. I believe the arguments were clearly made, as were other witnesses, but there was no requirement or reason to go through each and every witness with great specificity. The arbitrator
didn't say you need to at least identify the witnesses?
He did in a procedural order, and we did in fact identify those witnesses 15 days before. In fact, Kevin Swanson was the only will call that Sonata placed on its witness list. So as of the morning of arbitration, there's no question that we had planned to call Kevin Swanson, and in fact, arbitrator Naves issued a subpoena on the 29th, served on the 4th, requiring his presence at the arbitration. It was assumed that Mr. Swanson would testify at all times, and I know that appellees take issue and claim surprise on the morning of trial that we didn't submit an updated witness list, but then we wouldn't be able to call anybody if we hadn't submitted an updated list. The operative list included Kevin Swanson. Now, Justice Naves also and raised three arguments in precluding him, which we believe, again, evidence is clear error. One, that we subpoenaed but did fail to provide opposing counsel with a copy of the service of process under Rule 45. Rule 45 didn't apply specifically. It was Uniform Arbitration Act, supplemented by the Colorado rules, and nothing in the procedural order required us to do so. But again, Rule 45, as you're familiar, requires prompt service. Now, the fact that it was the second day when they were provided the service process, we don't believe created prejudice. Their case was still open. There was a panoply or a myriad of remedies that the court could have provided to the extent that there was any prejudice whatsoever, which there was not. Precluding them, we believe, was significant prejudice to our client. The second, that we didn't provide an updated list. But again, the operative list controlled. And third, which you've already spoken about, was the opening argument, which there was no requirement that we do so. So...
Counsel.
Yes, sir. Mr. Judge.
Judge Mays entered a ruling. He didn't just ignore, he didn't just tell you, no, you can't call a witness, but you attempted to call a witness. He entered a ruling. Does that qualify as refusing to hear evidence when he has made a particular ruling based on his understanding of a procedural rule or his rules for the arbitration? I'm not sure how we can review that if in fact he considered your offer of a witness and for whatever reason ruled against you.
Your Honor, once the determination was made that parole and extrinsic evidence was going to be admitted, this was a he said, she said case where the parties each followed the party line and he credited and discredited one party from the other. This was the person that would have discredited in the Michigan's interest the other party, and we believe would have tilted the balance toward our case. When he ruled in favor of precluding that witness, it created a reversible error. And as this court has found, party need not renew an objection to preserve a claim of error on appeal once the court makes a definitive ruling admitting or excluding evidence, which is People v. Renfro, 117 P. 3rd, 43, Co-op, 2004. Same ruling in Vista Resorts v. Goodyear, Tire and Rubber, 117 P. 3rd, 60.
Mr. Goldberg,
yes,
do you think the Federal Arbitration Act has any application to this case?
No, I don't, Your Honor, and I understand that there are different standards that apply when we're talking about manifest disregard, and here we're dealing with the Colorado Uniform Arbitration Act. But the Colorado Uniform Arbitration Act does provide certain protections. And the cases that we provided from around the country that have adopted the similar and the same rationale, that we should be entitled to fundamental due process, which means an opportunity to be heard, to present relevant and material evidence, especially when it's the most critical evidence.
Well, based upon your arguments set forth in your brief, it appears to me that this case is no different than if a case had been tried in a trial court.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. When we're looking at clear error and the standard, we literally have to look at whether or not Judge Brinkley correctly, and when faced with all these facts, determined that we actually had an opportunity to be heard when the person who the only admission against interest and the key evidence that we have is precluded. And that when he determines Judge Arbitrator Nave's application of a procedural rule trumps fundamental due process. So we don't believe that we're asking the court to create a new standard or to do anything other than uphold the law, which is recognizing here that it was clear error not to allow this testimony in. Similarly, the arbitrator Nave did not allow the testimony or us to present testimony from SK Foods and other people, other parties that were served in the service of process. When asked to do so, he had the ability and the opportunity to keep the record open. Again, he failed to allow us to do that, which we believe was critical to our counterclaims. But Kevin Swanson would have testified not only with respect to counterclaims and the tortious interference, because we were unable to admit critical emails and key evidence to establish that interference without being able to authenticate that information, but also without being able to present our case with SK Foods, Adams, and other competitors. So I don't believe that we're asking you to do anything. In light of Judge Brinkley's rulings, we ask you to overturn this matter and find in favor of Synopta. And Your Honor, we'd like to reserve, looks like 6 minutes.
6 minutes.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg.
May it please the court, my name is Jordan Factor, bar number 38126. I represent Colorado Mills. With me at council table is Patrick DeLone. We are here on a standard of review that the Tenth Circuit has called among the narrowest known to the law. Given the extraordinary deference accorded to arbitration awards, this court has observed that judicial review of an arbitral award may be a misnomer. The only question is whether Synopta received a fundamentally fair hearing, which it did. It entered 223 exhibits into evidence. It called 7 witnesses in its case in chief. It cross-examined thoroughly all of Colorado Mills' witnesses. It used every second of its allotted time. The evidence was sufficient to permit it to submit proposed findings of fact in support of its positions in excess of 100 pages. Its due process right to be heard was amply met in this case, and the hearing was not rendered fundamentally unfair merely by the exclusion of Kevin Swanson as a witness. And there are 3 reasons for that. First, Mr. Swanson's testimony would not have assisted SunOpta. SunOpta did not make an offer of proof at the arbitration hearing as to what his testimony would be, did not seek to enter his deposition into evidence at the time of the hearing, and before this court, did not quote from Mr. Swanson's deposition transcript at all. Nowhere in SunOpta's opening brief, nowhere in its reply brief, does it actually quote Mr. Swanson. And the reason is because Mr. Swanson's testimony was not helpful to SunOpta's case. He did not testify that the market price was less than the formula price. He did not testify that SunOpta's obligation to purchase oil depended in any way on the market price. To the contrary, he consistently and repeatedly testified that SunOpta's obligation was to purchase oil at the formula price. The testimony that SunOpta imagines for Mr. Swanson has been constructed post hoc and is not supported by the record. It is mere speculation. Second, all the evidence that SunOpta wished to elicit from Mr. Swanson was introduced through other witnesses, including Rick Robbins, Kevin Swanson's supervisor, who addressed all the issues on which Mr. Swanson was competent to testify. Now, SunOpta says that Mr. Swanson would have made admissions against interest. Not so. He did not do so in his deposition. What he said, and the only testimony to which SunOpta points, is that Mr. Swanson testified that he heard from Rick Robbins that SunOpta did not like the price yielded by the formula. Rick Robbins testified that SunOpta did not like the price yielded by the formula. It was no surprise to anyone, especially Judge Naves, that SunOpta did not like the price yielded by the formula. That's why the parties got into a dispute. And it certainly did not disturb Judge Naves' decision, which is the third reason why SunOpta was not substantially prejudiced. Because none of Kevin Swanson's testimony, even if it were laid out exactly as SunOpta conjectures, would have changed Judge Naves' opinion. The primary basis upon which Judge Naves ruled was his interpretation that the joint venture agreement obligated SunOpta to purchase oil at the formula price, regardless of what the market price was. Therefore, any market price testimony that Kevin Swanson could have provided would have been irrelevant to the primary basis for decision. Judge Naves' first alternative basis for decision was his conclusion that even if SunOpta's interpretation were correct, it would have required that a motion be made to the Joint Ventures Executive Committee and that no such motion was ever made. All 4 members of the JV's Executive Committee confirmed that no such motion was ever made, including both SunOpta representatives, and Kevin Swanson testified that he had no idea what the executive committee discussed because he was not a part of those meetings. So his testimony could not have disturbed the first alternative basis for decision. And the second alternative basis for decision was that the executive committee needed to be provided with contemporaneous evidence that the market price was in fact less than the formula price, and the executive committee at the time never received such evidence. Again, Kevin Swanson could not have contradicted that. SunOpta was not substantially prejudiced in this case. This is not one of the extraordinarily rare cases warranting vacature of an arbitration award. And we ask that you affirm the decision below. And if there are no further questions, I will yield the balance of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Factor. Mr. Mulber.
With respect to counsel's arguments, We recognize that there's a narrow standard. We understand that, and we believe that this case squarely fits within that narrow space. Mr. Factor confuses quantitative information with qualitative information. The mere fact that we are allowed to use our time and present exhibits doesn't mean that we're provided with due process and opportunity to be heard. That means all of a sudden we're unable to provide the information we want to provide. We have to find an alternative methodology to the extent we can. But again, there was nobody that was able to provide it in Michigan's interest.
Did you make an offer of proof?
Your Honor, there's a 20-minute discussion regarding the importance of Mr. Swanson's testimony. And I don't believe that there were specific statements that Mr. Swanson would testify to there wasn't specificity. There was an argument, an extraneous one, as to why it was critically important to our case, and that
But you didn't make an offer of proof as to what he would provide in the form of testimony.
We believe that the record establishes that he was a critically important witness that would provide an admission, and that he was critical to our case, which is why he was one of three people that we deposed, and he was our only will call, and that he was.
But his supervisor did testify.
His supervisor did, but that goes to the heart of our argument. And we're talking about, and I'll get to the board in a moment too, which I very much wanted to. Counsel argues that we didn't offer proof, even in the briefing before Your Honor. That's incorrect. The mere fact that we didn't want to take up room in our brief with cites doesn't mean that we didn't cite Mr. Swanson's deposition transcript. Specifically, that the parties were in fact locked in a genuine pricing dispute for the latter half of 2008, all of 2009. Swanson transcript, pages 3411 to 371, page 111, lines 14 through 112, line 7, page 143, lines 2 through 5, page 159, lines 5, 9, page 217, lines 1 through page 218, 3. The Colorado Mills had a long-standing practice of storing unsold crude oil when it found market prices unfavorable until the market rebounded, which goes expressly to damages and mitigation, exactly what was at issue before the court. Deposition transcript at pages 886-2, line 2 to 8718, that when selling crude to other buyers using the same process used with Sinop during price negotiations, Swanson checked oil prices posted on the National Sunflower Association USDA websites to ascertain current and future oil prices. This was pricing a forward contract. His deposition transcript at 128.7-1 to 131.24, and there are others. It goes on. They're all in our brief. The mere fact that we didn't blow them out doesn't mean they're not there.
Well, let me get to, I'm looking at paragraph 21.
Yes, sir.
Of the arbitrator's decision. I will quote it, the joint venture's executive committee was never presented with evidence that the formula price for oil exceeded the market price for oil. Now, what evidence?
Well, then
to counter that.
That's just that there isn't, because there's nothing in the bylaws or the governing documents that requires any type of motion to be made. Contrary to Appelli's arguments, there is nothing. Our testimony from our board members, where it was brought up, and there was contemporaneous writing. Theirs was that it wasn't brought up, which is why Kevin Swanson would have discredited those board members as well as his fellow employees. It goes to the very heart of what's at issue. There was nothing that was required. The information was before Judge Arbitrator Naves. He just credited Colorado Mills. And it goes to, the alternative basis. It wasn't. The alternative basis that Judge Arbitrator Naves relied upon was that a motion was made. There was no motion ever contemplated or required. There were a group of four guys who got together. There were contemporaneous notes admitted of record, and Arbitrator Naves credited those. And it's hard to fault him in light of the fact that Kevin Swanson's testimony wasn't before him. He would not have. That's why we were deprived of fundamental due process and our opportunity to be heard in this case. Again, credibility is key to everything here. As far as the deposition and why we didn't attempt to admit his deposition, arbitrator Nagy's rule, this person has not testified. I'm sure that he would not have allowed Kevin Swanson to testify indirectly through deposition when he wasn't going to allow him to testify directly.
Well, but that's why you make an offer of proof for appellate reasons.
We believe that the argument and that the fight over whether or not he was going to be precluded did exactly that. And there was a substantive ruling, a ruling he is not going to be allowed. And we let him know why he was so important, why we went out of our way to subpoena him, why he was on our will call list, and it was an oversight not to update the list, but there was no prejudice, none whatsoever. We were the only one that was significantly prejudiced from introducing probative and material information that we believe would undoubtedly have required a different finding in this case. As such, we ask that you find in favor of Sinop.
Thank you, Mr. Goldberg.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And thank you again, Mr. Factor. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.